God made man. Man is composed of body, physical, intellect and soul. Man has, so to say, a physical body, an intellect and soul. There are great possibilities in man which are endowed by God equally well. But the question remains that we have to develop those possibilities within us. Some have dwelt in one way, the other have dwelt the other way. We have made so much advancement, so far as our physical side is concerned, and along with it, our social and political. We have also advanced wonderfully, so far as the intellect side is concerned. I did not mention how far we have advanced in that respect. Everybody knows we have learned how to fly in the air. We can see television, we have got radios and others. But both these things, I mean physical body and intellect, are dependent on the soul which we are, you see. We know little or nothing about that. We only know that much what is given in the Holy Scriptures. Those saints who came in the past, they did experience their sight as a soul, I might say, and they are spiritually. Those who did experience of their own self, and after knowing their own self, they had the experience of our self. They left us valuable prayers of the experiences which they had with their self and our self, which now exist with us in the form of Holy Scriptures. We are fortunate today in the 20th century that all the saints and the masters who came in the past, their experiences are with us. We have got a wonderful legacy, you might say, with us. Had we come, say, 100 years before, we would not have the saints of Swamiji Maharaj, the latest saint who came in India. And if you still go back, say, about 500 years back, we would not have the Holy Scriptures of the Sikhs, which form, I think, over 1400 pages, big sizes. Still further, if you go back, had we come before the time of Prophet Muhammad, say about 1400 years back, we would not have the Quran before us. Similarly, had we come before 2000 years ago, we would not have the wonderful things of Christ with us. The point is, whenever these saints came in the past, they gave us the esoteric side of the things. This addictive side of the mind, you see. What they have spoken just now, they only gave a history of the physical side of the show, objective side of it. Not the inner man, which is the reality, a real man. Even before you go back, Zoroastra came, you see, Janis, Mahavir came up, Buddha, Lord Buddha came up. Had we come even before those times, you see, we would not have the their experience with us. I say, if we had come before the times of the old Vedas, the oldest scriptures in the world, we would not have the those stages with us as well. So I say we are fortunate in this 20th century that all saints who came in the past, their wonderful experiences that they had with their self and with the over self, all of them are with us. Now it remains, there should be somebody who has the experience of that in life and can guide us and help us in having those experiences with the head or with the thought at the time when they did come. The difference lies only in the expression, the mode of expression and the language which are prevalent at the time, but the subject matter has been the same. The same thing even now stands, you see. Great is man. There are greater possibilities in man which you have to develop. I have just said that you have developed wonderfully so far as the objective side is concerned, physically and intellectually, but we know little or nothing so far as the intellectual side is concerned. We know little man, we can see also the very background of it, the over self, the real background of the inner man. So first of all, the question is with us that who we are and what we are. Is this 5 and 6 feet high statue which we are carrying, is this the man? Well, this is outer man. This is the statue which we have to leave someday. Each man has to leave it. And the day does come when each one of also has to leave this body. That the inner man which leaves the body, that we have to know. That is why all rishis and saints who came in the past gave out that thing, know thyself. Even the old Greeks had to say that, not a season. Guru Nanak and Christ also reiterated the same truth. Well, know thyself who you are and what you are. Those had experience, who had experience of themselves, how they had that experience, how they could have the experience of the old self, they are wonderful, are they? Valuable experiences we have got in Holy Scriptures with us. Nowadays you can read those Holy Scriptures, but to understand the right import thereof, we would require someone who has got experience of that inner self and the over self. If you have these Holy Scriptures from a man with that experience, you will be able to understand the right import of all those things. If you hear the same thing from an intellectual man, he will no doubt do his best to interpret things, but there may be a place where you will feel very badly. For instance, I will quote you one instance. In all the holy places of all the religions that exist today, you will find a common symbol in all of them. We have got temples which are domed shaped like the man's, and there you find the little light and also bell, ringing of the bell over there. In the Sikh temples also it is like that. In Buddhists and Jainists also they have got the same symbol. In the case of Zoroastra, you will find there also the unstuck light, symbol of unstuck light. In the case of the Christians also, the cathedrals are made nose-shaped, like the T-shaped. Therein also you find candles are lit and bell is going on. This is a common symbol which you find in all the churches, temples of different social religions. What do they stand for? That's the point. There is something common about which we do not know exactly why what for they stand for. I had a Christian superintendent under me when I was in service. He was a Roman Catholic, and I asked him, when looking at her, the Bishop of Lahore in India, he was considered to be most advanced intellectually. I asked him, well, will you go to Bishop and ask him, what does these two symbols stand for? He went to him and asked him, well, what does this symbol of the bell going on stands for? He replied, it is only to call men together. We take it all right, so far as the church is concerned, this may stand for that. But in other temples you will find the man who enters the temple rings the bell. So there are some common symbols, some symbol which stands for some experience inside, about which we know nothing so far. You'll find here that an intellectual man will fail where? It is a symbol of the sound principle going on in the reverberating in the whole universe and in the body of man. This is a symbol which stands for that in almost all religious places. So this is what I say. We can read the Holy Scriptures, but we cannot grasp the right import of them until we know, come across a man who has got experience of himself. So these are experiences which man had and now also can have. If some personality, someone who is experienced, who has experience of the same thing within and is competent to give you the lighting of the light in all the temples and mosques and churches, you'll find that the light of God, symbol of the light of God. So there is light of God within everybody. There is sound principle going on, can be heard in everybody. Those who had experience of it, when they are asked, have you seen God? Is there a God? What did they reply? This question was put to Christ, and he said, behold the Lord. He does not give any reasoning for it. He says, behold the Lord. He says, yeah, you see it. The same question he put to Guru Nanak in India. Where is there a God? He says, yes, he is appearing everywhere. I see him. You remember the name of Vivekananda who came to America some time back? He was an atheist before. He is challenging everybody that there is no God. If there is there anyone, man who has seen him? So he was just directed to one personality in Calcutta in India. When he went over to him, he asked him, Master, have you seen God? And he looked into his eyes and said, yes, my child, I see him. Just as I see you, even more clearly. which are those eyes with which that can be seen. Guru Nanak says, those eyes are different with which we can see Him. That eye is in every man, but still closed. We require opening of that eye. In Christ repetite, eye is the light of the body. The point is like that, you see, I'm speaking of the spiritual side. I'm not taking of the physical side now, before me. Spirit is lost thing, you see. Physical body is subject to decay. If with supernatural powers you can maintain for longer life, it may be, but it is, I think, not what as compared with the spiritual life. Well, this is only by the way of understanding certain things. They are not very clear, because you think, you'll see that everything is not possible to be given out in one talk. That requires a series of talks, subject by subject. We can dwell more on each point. This was general digest I laid before you, you see. If you people have got any particular point of view to be understood, but to the best I know, I would say, man cannot claim that he knows everything, but to the best I have learned, I have seen, you are all welcome to come to me, but during the time I am here, and that time might be fixed, I think, Mr. Khanna, if anybody would like to come and just know more about these things on particular points, because in general talks every point cannot be touched in detail. Only Kasivu can be given. But if anybody is, I mean, after the salvation or something, perhaps, I hope I might be able to give you more light on the subject. Even now, this is an old science, as I would say. Not new thing which I am just putting before you, but we have forgotten. Now, there is a dire necessity of someone who has got experience of that very thing within himself and is competent to give you first-hand experience. The qualification of a saint is given by almost all the masters who came in the past, who can open our understandings, open our inner eyes to see the reality with one's own eyes. Shams Tabriz, a Mohammedan saint, he says we should be able to see God with our own eyes and hear His voice with our own ears. This is what all other saints would say so. When that question is put to us, is there a God? What we say, what we have to say. We simply say, Bible says so, Quran says so, and other holy scriptures say this and that thing about that thing. Such and such saints have said so. They are correct. But it is they who have said so. What have you to say on this subject? That's the point. Have you got any personal experience with yourself? The question of experience with the over self will come only when you know yourself, who you are, what you are. At present we are, as if we are the body itself. We cannot transcend it, we cannot analyze it at will. Unless we know ourselves, we cannot know ourselves. So, self-knowledge precedes God knowledge. You'll say that there are so many people who are believing God. Excuse me, they have not seen God. So long as they have not seen it, they are not seers in the true sense of the word. I am seeing you. I am seers of you people. I know you are, because I have seen you. We have heard from people there is a God. We have learned in holy scriptures that there is a God. No doubt, we have got that informal thing, but we have not seen it. Unless we see a thing, we are not convinced. We learn, you see, from the Holy Scriptures, we hear from the saints that there is a God. When we find parallel experiences of so many saints who came in the past, we can take that as an experiment measure to take up the subject, but we are not fully convinced until we see the reality with our own eyes. For instance, a sick patient is there. Doctor comes up and says, "You got water in your belly." He has not seen the water in the belly, but because an expert man has come up and he says so, the most thing he can do, he will send for a board of doctors. They come up, they all diagnose the same disease. He seeks them intellectually, isn't it? And the doctor says, "Well, this operation is very dangerous, you might die. Give us in writing, even if you die in operation, we are not responsible." And he gives in writing and the testimony of few of the doctors before him. This is only I'm mentioning, by the way, to show there is a God. The saints who came in the past, all holy scriptures, what they say, they are correct. But the question is, so long as we do not see for our own selves, we cannot be fully convinced. Master say, we cannot be convinced even by the sayings of the masters unless we see that reality with our own eyes. That the teachings of the old saints in the past, they believe in an experience which we can have today, in this very life. We are not to wait till after death. So this has been the subject before us ever since the world began. There are two sides of the religion, he said. One is the outer, objective side, and the other is the subjective side. Objective side are the apravidya, as it is called in the Sanskrit, consists in all outer forms, rituals, formalism, reading of scriptures, visiting holy places, and all other rituals concerned with them. This is the preparation of the ground, elementary steps to be taken up just to create love from God, just to direct or divert our attention from outside and direct to something higher. These are helping factors, but not the be-all and end-all. Be-all and end-all before us is to know ourselves and to contact ourselves. This is a subject which has been one for all humanity, and still it is the same. You may belong to any social religion, so to have a social religion is a blessing, I would say. God made man, and man made social body. Because man is social, he will have to live in some social body. Otherwise, he will have to just create another social body to live in. So that is why, when Christ was approached with that question, that the king over there wants tribute to be paid, what have you to say on this subject? He said, "All right, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and what is God's to God. All bodies belong to the social bodies we are born in, you remain there. But your souls are of God's. Just know yourself and contact with God. This is the subject with us ever since we were given. This is the solving of the mystery of life, and until that is solved practically for us, we cannot be at peace. We will be groping for something. When that is known, nothing else remains to be known. This is what the Upanishad said. What is that? Knowing which all other things are known. Man is satisfied forever. And that is knowing oneself and knowing ourself. You would ask, well, what particular sect I am preaching? Well, I am preaching that very subject before you. We are to remain where we are in any social bodies. We are born, remain there. The teachings of those social bodies are all common. They all enjoy chastity of life, non-violence, not to think evil of others, be truthful, have chaste lives. Chastity is life and sexuality is death. God is in all, human beings in all creation, love all, have hatred for none, and selfless service. These are the five pillars, I would say, which form the ethical life preached by almost all the social religions that exist today. So that is the qualification for a man to go in for the knowledge of self and knowledge of God overhead. Remain where you are, but you are a soul of God's, devoted to God. So that is why the subject matter before me, I am running only as a school of spirituality. Spirituality means science of the soul. Just as medical line is the science of the body, all are equally endowed with the same two eyes, two ears, mouth, all limbs, outer form of the man is the same, and inner construction is also the same. And the disease from which we are suffering, that each man's soul is in the control of the mind, and mind is in the control of the outgoing faculties, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves, who we are, what we are. This is the disease each one of us having. We have to analyze ourselves, know ourselves, and then know ourselves. This is we have to solve. So I have taken up only the subjective side of the things and putting before you. To be born in a temple is a blessing, I will say, but to remain there attached in a bigoted form, narrow-mindedness, that is creates more sin than good. So I am only talking from the subject matter of the science of the soul. This is what I have got before me. The master at Insuit had the good fortune to sit in India. He gave me that thing to just create a common ground for all to sit together. I think this is the first of its kind, and with all brothers are coming up, those who are really seeking after truth. So all saints and rishis who came in the past, I have respect for all of them. Those who are at present, my respect also goes to them. Those who may come in the future, for them I also have the same time. So I have come as a humble admirer of all those saints who came in the past, whether in one country or the other, and I respect their teachings. So far as they are concerned with the esoteric side or the subjective side of the thing. As you are the outer side, the objective side, they have got their own forms, their own ways of living and rituals and other things. I have also respect for them, but that I do not take as a be-all and end-all.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording You listen to What's the First 30 Minutes of Master's Talk called Path of the Masters, which was given on June 21, 1955 in Washington, D.C. Our reader this evening is Marcia Crosby. Hello, Marcia.
Good evening, everyone. Today I'll be reading from The Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Volume 3, The New Life. The section on true living to world and to God. Kabir Saab says that all are human beings, and this is the time to understand these noble things and awaken out of the slothfulness. Awake, beloved, why sleep? The night has passed. Why lose the day also? This is the time to wake up, to become more conscious. Give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and remember that your soul belongs to God. You can make your home a lonely forest. Is not the night a lonely forest? The disciples who spend their nights in sweet remembrance of the Lord become God themselves. If a man can control the dim hours from sunset to sunrise, he becomes a true human being. One master has said that in the night, the Lord's fragrance is given out. He who remains awake receives this precious gift. Do the worldly duties in the daytime, and at night, consider that you are all alone, deep in the country. One's duties and social obligations with family and friends should be performed with pleasure, because God has joined you together for the sake of give and take. But in the night, you can feel free from all this and repose in His lap. It is not at all necessary to leave your home and family for meditation when you have the long, lonely nights. When you are wholly absorbed in some object, it is a true sannyas, cutting off from all other things. And if we start from today, most definitely our lives will change. We should cultivate true humility, which is neither servile nor assertive. These are the things that will please the Master and make us receptive to the gracious Master power working overhead. If you live a life of humility and simplicity, you will have peace of mind. After all, what is there on earth that belongs to you? Why be attached to the vanities of the world when the treasures of divinity lie within you? If you live for God, all things shall work out in your best interests, not only spiritually, but also materially. This is the fundamental law of God, and can be realized by all who practice true living. Another important aspect of the good life concerns outer behavior, which should be natural to the society into which one is born. No acting or posing is required. There are some dear ones who believe that they should adopt the outer symbols of dress and name that characterize the society into which the Master was born, in the belief that this is pleasing to him. The life of the Spirit does not call for conversion to outer modes of living in name, appearance, or apparel. The Masters do not come to make or unmake social orders. Their mission is just to fulfill the law of God, which is to redeem His lost children. They simply ask us to convert ourselves inwardly, to be poor in spirit and pure at heart. You need not worry about the opinions of others. Views based upon one's own testimony are the best. Every person receives help according to his individual receptivity. All are on the way to perfection. All that each dear one has to do is carry on with meditations regularly, with love, faith, and devotion, and to develop from day to day. All necessary help is extended from the Master Power within and without. Just learn to live in the living present, making best use of time at your disposal. The precious moments of earth life spent in meditations and honest work count much for inner spiritual progress. With continued spiritual progress toward inner development, outer things become less disturbing. Remember, events come and go. Inner development, as it progresses, will gradually eclipse the physical temptations. One begins to do things in order to carry on with the higher ideal always before him or her, the fulfillment of which becomes an all-absorbing vocation in one's life. Such things as are conducive to higher progress become joyful. Every day and every hour, convey thanks to the Master, the God in him who has put you on the way, and for all other gifts you enjoy. In this way, you will be aware of the Master all the time. Without him, you can do nothing, and with him, you can do all things. The more time you will spend with the Master, the smoother your everyday life will become. Try to develop within, and you will see for yourself how the karmic circle works. The why and the wherefore of all things will become as broad daylight when you rise into the causal plane. The possibility of future incarnations can be ruled out by gradual development of loving devotion to the Master Power and aversion for worldly possessions. If you sleep in remembrance of God, the very thought will be circulating in your bloodstream, and when you awaken, you will arise in His sweet remembrance. They say that if one's early morning hours are wasted in sleep, one dies before living. So whatever labels are stuck on your physical form, allow them to remain, and keep your own faith, language, symbols, and customs. The soul, however, is of the same essence as that of God, and we are all His children. The soul, therefore, belongs to God. Give it to Him. If you will run Godward, all else will follow of its own accord. The greatest purpose of human life is that one should know oneself and know God, and all the rest is mere dissipation. Master is Word made flesh. He is the light, life, and love. If you live and move in Him, He will be your very life and give you more light and love. Word is the bread of life and water of life. When you are hungry and thirsty, enter into the inner stillness and receive amply of the same, which gives life eternal. This is within you. None is barred from it. Forget the past, forget the future. Relax fully. Be still. Be alone to your own self, giving yourself wholly to the Master. Light and love will be generated through you to all the world over. The second reading is from God-Man, the section entitled Duties of the God-Man, which is Chapter 16. Countless are the duties and responsibilities of a master. His first and foremost work is to link once again the created with the Creator, to win for him the kingdom of God, and restore him to his ancient and forgotten lineage and heritage. This he does by means of Shabd, or word, which carries the spirit to its native home. Like electromagnetic waves, the Shabd, or word, is vibrating everywhere. But unfortunately, through the overpowering density and weight of matter on the physical plane, we are unable to feel it and harness it to our benefit. A master, by his personal guidance, frees the spirit from the dead weight of matter, disengages it from the sensory organs, withdraws its ever-spreading rays, and collects them at its center, behind the two eyebrows, thereby enabling it to experience a little of the light of God and to hear Shabd, the voice of God, both of which by continuing practice can be developed in course of time. The jiva then finds himself attracted by that magnetic power, the sound principle, which carries him step by step to his ultimate goal. A mere knowledge of the science of the masters cannot be of any avail. And intellectualism by itself, however keen, cannot be of any aid. An ethical life is a stepping stone to spirituality. Cleanliness is said to be next to godliness. A master, therefore, begins his work with man-making. Cleanliness in thought, word, and deed is an essential, which cannot be overemphasized. As self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge, a master has first to impart in theory and practice the knowledge of the spirit, to liberate it from the shackles of mind and body. Gradually, the spirit is enabled to cast off the various coverings or sheets with which it is enshrouded, until it becomes spirit clean, untrammeled and unalloyed, and exultantly cries out, "I am spirit." After this comes training in God knowledge, which is the climax and the crest jewel in the science of spirituality, and enables the spirit to attain Godhead. Once the shepherd takes charge of a lost sheep and brings it to his fold, he takes over the entire responsibility. "Once a master, always a master," is a well-known dictum. Master on earth, he is master in the various regions, subtle, causal, and beyond. He does not rest until a spirit is safely escorted back to the Father's mansion in heaven. The process of homegoing and progress on the path is entirely at his discretion, and he is the sole judge for the time and measure of each step Godward. From the time the spirit crosses over to the astral plane and comes face to face with the self-luminous form of the master, the jiva has nothing more to do and strive for. It is the master's job henceforth. Apart from this, a master is a child of light, and like a lighthouse over tempestuous seas, sheds his kindly light throughout the world. Like the good shepherd, he has to look after and tend many sheep. Whoever has anything to do with a master soul is ultimately to be prepared for the path and helped through in his probation and apprenticeship. The final reading is from Nam or Word, the chapter on Amrit. Amrit, or Abhihayat, or Maharas, is the elixir of life. For whoever partakes of it gets everlasting life and escapes forever from the otherwise interminable round of births and deaths. The sages and seers wandered in quest of it, but nowhere in the wide world were they able to find it. Is it then a chimera or mirage? The saints, in reply, have repeatedly said that Amrit is something real and solid. It is the water of immortality, which lies hidden and buried within the depths of the soul, encrusted with the dust of ages, and many and may be delved into even now and rediscovered, if one has the patience to do as he is bidden. In the scriptures of the various religions, we come across references to the sacred water of life. The Muslim divines describe it as Ab-i-Haywan or Ab-i-Hayat, and always suggested its use to the world-weary pilgrims. It is also called Chasma-i-Kausar. The Hindu scriptures call it Mansarovar, or the pool of nectar, Amritsar, which, if tasted, would grant life everlasting. In the Vedas, we read of it as Soma Ras, which granted cosmic awareness or universal consciousness to the rishis and the munis, who partook of it in ages long ago. The saints generally call it Amritsar, or the pool or the fount of nectar. Christ often spoke of it as the water of life. And this is a quote from Christ. And let him that is athirst come, and whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely. Whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. In the Holy Bible, it is stated that Christ used to bring the dead to life. At one place, he is said to have administered this water of life to a Samaritan lady. From all this, it is abundantly clear that Christ freely made use of this water of life in treating the ills of mankind. And very often, he refers to the voice of God as well. In St. Paul, we have, "For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." And Christ said, "When the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live." By these means, he is said to have redeemed no less than 144,000 souls. The rishis and munis, or the holy men of old, and even the saints in comparatively recent times, tasted the water of life and made their followers drink from the great fountainhead. And it is possible even today to partake of this water with the grace and kindness of some master saint. From a careful study of the scriptures, we learn that the water of life, or nectar, is nothing but the word or logos of Christ, Nam or Shabd of the saints, the Kalma of the Muslims, and the Nad of the Vedic rishis. Amrit, is the true Nam or word, but it cannot be described in words. He who tastes of it by attuning with the word is accepted at his court. Guru Amar Das. O dear self, Amrit is the Hari Nam, and one gets access to it through a master soul. Guru Ram Das. The word of God is the elixir of life and is a panacea for all the ills of the world. Bikam says, it is with the grace of the Guru that one finds a way to salvation. Bikam. The Master's word is pure ambrosia. A draught of it quenches all thirst. Guru Amar Das. The treasure of the word is the water of life. Drink ye, my brothers, to your heart's fill. The way to the nectarian treasure of word, truth, one finds through a saint. Blessed are the saints who are ever devotedly in tune with it. Guru Arjan. Amrit becomes manifest by devotion to the master. O Nanak, Shabd is the nectar of life, and a rare devotee of the master partakes of it. Guru Ram Das. The limitless song, Anahad Bani, has an ambrosial effect. It lulls both the body and mind to a quiet repose. Guru Arjan. O thou who makest manifest the elixir of Bani within, I make an offering of myself to thee, for thou hast implanted in me the Amrit Bani, word, and I remain absorbed in the holy Nam. O God, wonderful are thy ways and means. The mind in the gyres can hardly understand them. Thou hast attuned it with the delectable Amrit, Bani, and the immortal ambrosial word, Shabd, is now fully manifest. Guru Amar Das. Those who are proud of thy Nam are completely saturated with it. O Nanak, there is but one Amrit, nectar, and none beside it. Guru Angad. The Nam of Hari is the elixir, and a draught of it makes one contented. O Nanak, he who drinks of it escapes all delusion. Whoever deals in the wealth of Nam lives on the everlasting mana of life. Guru Arjan. The word of the master is extremely sweet. Such an elixir one finds within. Whoever tastes of it gets perfected. O Nanak, such a one remains in perpetual bliss. Guru Nanak. The word of the master is the water of life. To drink it is to quench all thirst. The mind verily gets drenched in truth and always remains absorbed in truth. Guru Amar Das. The riches of the word, truth, one gets through the grace of the master. Blessed are the saints who are ever in tune with it. Guru Arjan. Amrit is often used for Hari, God, Hari Kirtan, the divine song, and Maharas, exhilarating vintage. He alone gets out of desires who engages in the word. Hari is the fruit of the tree of life, Amrit fall, and is a gift from God. False are the designs and colors that we see. A drop of water of life is a blessing that comes from a sadhu. Hari Nam alone is Amrit. Commune ye with it. Through the grace of the master, Hari Nam is all pure. A contact with it ends pain and sorrow. Guru Ram Das. A rare soul drinks the cup of divine vintage, Hari Ras. O Nanak, he gets the reward of the divine word and thereafter lives by it. Guru Arjan. I sacrifice my all on him who implanted the life-giving Nam in me, the ambrosia of Nam is supremely sweet. One drinks of it by the direction and will of the Master. Guru Amar Das. The scriptures tell us that what we call Amrit, or the water of life, is just the same thing as Nam, or the Word. A touch with this divine vintage gives God intoxication. Those who wholly depend on thy Nam are completely dyed in thy color, O Nanak. There is only one exhilarating vintage and no other. Guru Angad. In this age of Kali Yuga, there is no other wine but Amrit. God's Nam is Amrit in the present Kali age. This is the wealth one may get by devotion to a sadhu. Guru Arjan. Amrit is sound principle. Amrit is divine harmony and is reverberating all the time everywhere. It is the bread of life, mana, or heavenly food on which the spirit feeds and thrives. With the meeting of the Satguru, the ever-restless mind gets steady and one finds the tenth door. There the melody divine, the bread of life, holds the universe tight. Countless are the strains and endless, ever saturated in truth, O Nanak. The contact thereto comes through a God-man alone. No more the wild goose chase, for homeward one is led. Guru Amar Das. A disciplined soul makes one self-disciplined and contented. He becomes. Absorption in the Master awakens the inner music of the soul. By drinking the nectar divine, one is contented and rises in his presence. Listen ye to the great music of the harp and taste it night and day. A rare soul alone understands it through the Master's grace. Amrit is light principle. The vision center behind and between the two eyes, if and when directed steadily toward Gagan, inner horizon, gradually gets lighted up. It starts with flashes as from lightning, and in course of time makes manifest a starry sky, and the sun and moon come to view beside several other lighted scenes. When the spirit transcends all these and enters Trikuti, the headquarters of the subtle region, there she beholds the sun of Brahmand, and beyond Brahmand, the moon of Parabrahmand region. We come across frequent references to the higher spiritual phenomena in the writings of St. Tulsi Sab and many others. Blessed indeed is the ambrosial sound of God, the contact whereof comes through the grace of the Master. The darkness is dispelled, and one gets enlightenment just as the sun chases away the darkness of the night. Then one sees the otherwise invisible, the inexpressible and unfathomable, one as explained by the Master, Guru Ram Das. Wondrous sweet is the nectarian voice of the Master. Fortune may favor a rare soul to relish it. Light within, one quaffs the quintessence divine, and hears the true sound at the seat of the soul. Pure is the light, and soma juice is the word. A contact with them grants a selfless life of everlasting bliss. Guru Arjan. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. St. Paul. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. The Psalms. And I'll close there. Today we heard from the teachings of Kirpal Singh, Volume 3, the section entitled True Living, to World and to God, and from Godman, Chapter 16, Master and His Duties, and from Nam or Word, Selections from the chapter on Amrit.
Thank you, Marcia, for reading Master's inspiring words to us. There were 57 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for bringing us together to receive your guidance and your blessings.
All that is out and from God. But it pervades everywhere. It is the life principle of the entire creation. He in whom this world or now becomes personified or manifested is called a saint. For it is said that the world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us.